This is the September 15 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dave Chatterton. He's with Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois. Aaron Curtis is here from Midco in Normal, Illinois. And Jim McCormick joins us from AgMarket.net out of Barrington, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org and check out the schedule while you're there. The winter meeting season is already filling up very quickly. Actually, we started today really with a fall webinar series from the Farm Doc team. That's on Thursdays at 11 a.m. And you can sign up for these for free at the Farm Doc website, farmdoc.illinois.edu, under the archives of the webinar. Catch next week, Thursday. We'll be talking about the price of farmland and the word that the ag economists have used to describe that this year is phenomenal. If you know anything about ag economists, that in itself is phenomenal. Now, let's get started with our program today. Dave Chatterton from StrategicFarmMarketing.com. What's on your list to discuss today?
Yeah, good afternoon, Todd. And, you know, I guess from a producer standpoint here, when we look at the market, and particularly the futures market here, and even to a lesser degree basis and in the cash market, it's been a very volatile and a very confusing, I think, period here, especially in the last half of the summer, or maybe even since the highs got put in earlier in the crop year. And what we've had is a situation where we're trading on one side of the fence against the standard grain fundamentals that we look at, you know, in a normal year and day in and day out, against some of the macroeconomic influences in the Fed and the Global World Bank fight against inflation and the discussion of economic recession and how it's affecting demand and different things. In the middle of that, we've got a war going on in Europe and tensions rising between the U.S. and China. So all of that affects money flow into our markets. I think the fund money flow into and then back out of the market on the inflation play earlier in the year has been the story of the year. And I think that outside market influence and how it affects the sentiment of these money managers is really going to be the biggest driver here as we get into and through harvest.
Aaron Curtis from Midco in Bloomington Normal, Illinois. What's on your list for the day?
Well, now that the crop report's passed us on Monday and we've kind of factored in a little bit more of a firmer yield in terms of corn and soybeans, focus now kind of turns to demand, and we've seen this soybean dollar in Argentina really let loose of a few bushels in Argentina, and China's turned around and snapped a lot of those up here for last half SEP in October. So, you know, when we start looking at demand on exports, corn export demand continues to be pretty tepid, and now we've seen Argentina kind of come and undercut us, which is usually a little bit better time period for U.S. bean exports moving forward. And it looks like, at least on paper, another record Brazil crop coming. So what could that possibly mean for exports and demand in general here as we move through harvest and into the winter months?
And finally, Jim McCormick, anything else to add from AgMarket.net?
Well, I think those two gentlemen both have great topics, actually some of the ones I wanted to bring up. But also, I think something we're talking to a lot of our producers about right now, a lot of guys are locking in you know, fertilizer for next year's crop. And plain and simple, we're just reminding them the market doesn't owe you a profit. And, you know, encouraging guys to really start, if you're starting to lock in those higher input costs for the 2023 crop, don't be afraid to start marketing, or at least trying a way to protect some of that revenue.
You have interesting ways to pull that off?
We do have a couple of different ways that we're looking at doing it, actually.
All right. Well, they can give you a call and find out. Dave Chatterton, I take it that you probably have been thinking about this and the crop insurance decisions that producers have to make once they get to February and the difference between those two things, the risk that's between this part of the year in the fall and the spring, which really looks like it could be pretty good sized.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, we're dealing with some pretty good inverses year over year here, and that's to be expected. But I think there's two things there. I mean, you know, as Jim mentioned, I mean, profitability is really the key here in what you're looking at. I mean, even though we've rolled back a little bit, and I know a lot of producers who sold too early or too much too early last year have a little reluctance. When we look at, if you take a Central Illinois cash value today for new crop 22 production and say it's 650 at a 220 bushel yield, you're talking about a little over $1,400 per acre. If you take a cash bean bid in Central Illinois, it's say 14.30 and 65 bushels an acre, you're talking about, we'll call that $930 an acre. So some very profitable levels out there. And, you know, with the confusion and the volatility that we mentioned here earlier, I think, you know, focus on price, or excuse me, focus on the profitability, not the price equation here. I think if you talk about new crop, definitely worth having that conversation. Definitely, you know, in Jim's camp of, I think I'd be looking to lock in my input sooner rather than later, considering the natural gas situation in Europe, the fertilizer situation globally, and probably getting worse before it gets better. In terms of how that looks for crop insurance, don't forget that this month you still have an opportunity to use a crop insurance product called Margin Protection. Now, it's not the cheapest product in the world, but it does offer some very good, compelling revenue. If you're talking about a 95% product here in corn, you're talking about a guarantee level on your 23 crop of around $1,250 an acre. In corn, and probably around $840 an acre in beans for a Central Illinois or Indiana producer. Now, you're going to pay the premium to get to that, but as a way of protecting that profit and ensuring profitability over what can be a very long and like I said, I think a period in the grain market where we can get hijacked to a degree by how these outside markets act and influence our market. We had a great, you know, draft on the way up when the inflation play was going on earlier in the year. We took December corn futures, you know, from, you know, a May high of 765, though, all the way down to 560 before we kind of came back up here. And same thing in beans, let's say 1585 in November beans, all the way down to just under $13. So be cognizant that there is some downside price risk here, as Jim pointed out. And I think you want to look at proactive ways of managing that, whether that's with, you know, with its pricing tools, whether it's with a crop insurance tool, or whether it's with a combination of both, those would be our approach.
Okay, and Aaron Curtis, because I personally would not use the marketplace just so that I'm not involved in it. It's tough enough having a cash side and trying not to talk my own position in the marketplace when I'm asking questions. But if I were to do this, I would simply make a cash sale going into 2023 for corn. Have producers done that?
For 2023, for the fall of 2023, is that what you're talking about, Todd?
Yes, if I were going to cover fertilizer bids, yeah.
Yeah, so no, not in any great way. There's been a little bit of movement out there, but it's been pretty light. You know, there's still quite a bit of 2022 that still needs to be priced. You know, we're estimating 25 to 30% of the crop's been sold, both corn and soybeans at this point. So a lot of work to do. And typically the producer, right, kind of focuses on one thing at a time, right? Not really paying a whole lot of attention to next year yet, because still trying to figure out what to do this year. And it's going to be really interesting to see what the farmer does across the scale this fall, because they, for the most part, don't need the money. So money needs are pretty low right now in the farming community. We talked about some of those margins, right, that the farmer's seeing right now. So that plays into that. But you know, last 2 years, farmers been rewarded to not do much at fall, right? Now in fall 2020, we got to $4 corn. He sold that, and then he lamented that haul the next year, right, because the market kept rallying. And last year, we went down to about $5 and rallied again. So farmers been rewarded to not do anything. And if you think the producer is somewhat of a creature of short-term habits, right, it's going to be interesting to see if that same mentality is gone through again this year with the general bullishness out there right now with tight ending stocks for corn and soybeans. So, you know, with these corn trying $7 this week and November beans trying $15, tells you just to sell that stuff and be done with it. And if you want to reown it on paper, do it. But it's going to be really interesting to see what the farmer does, and that's going to have some impact on basis and spreads here as we move into that fall time frame, Todd. So we ask a lot of our elevator customers, what do you think the farmer is going to do across the scale? And we get a lot of mixed opinions on what that answer is going to be.
I will come back to that in just a minute. But Jim McCormick, I want you to come back and answer a question for me, because if you do make that 2023 cash sale, as I would be prone to do, I understand that there's a lot of risk involved there, especially to the upside. Can you talk about that risk and really how you manage that in a better way with the futures markets?
Well, right now, if you did a cash sale, we would encourage you to come out and, you know, like I said, on something like yourself, then maybe buy a call, because a lot's going to hinge on the size of what South America is. What we're doing right now for a lot of people, because a lot of guys don't want to do the cash sale. They want to wait and see what happens because they are a little bit friendly. You know, corn for these 23s at $6.20 versus dang near $7 for the 22. But what we've had a lot of customers look at doing is playing in the short-dated options. Buying a March short-dated $6 put, selling the March short-dated $6.75 call. Theoretics settle around 7.5 cents tonight. So what the producers are doing there, Todd, is they're putting a $6 floor in, putting a $6.75 ceiling in for around 7.5 cents. Now, this is a March option. It will expire before at the end of February, but what it's going to do, we believe, is give you a floor until you get a better handle on what that crop insurance floor is going to be. We know a vast majority of the producers do buy the regular crop insurance, but we don't know what that price is going to be. As Dave pointed out at the very beginning of the show, the macro headwinds are very, very, very severe right now, and who knows where we're going to be 6 months from now. A lot of producers, you know, might remember back in 2012, in the drought year of 2012, some of your highest prices on the crop years out were early on. People held off waiting for that secondary move in the next year out. It never happened. So we think this is a good way to at least put a floor in place, a decent floor, $6, and worst case, $6.75 ceiling. We think that's not a bad place to start laying off that risk, especially when you're putting out this expensive, paying these expensive fertilizer bills.
Dave, there isn't really a carry in either corn or soybean, certainly not an inverse either at this point. How should farmers approach the sell across the scale or store decision?
Yeah, Todd, I think it's just a personal decision. Farmers who have bins want to use those bins, and of course we want them to utilize bins in most cases to make what is a modest carry in the corn market. There's very little here in the beans. So what I would say is if it's a decision of what do I store in my bins at the farm or at home, I think that decision is probably corn, unless you're making a very, aggressive flat price risk. If you look at where we're at in terms of, these cash prices, I don't think it's, even at harvest and harvest type basis levels, it's not a bad play to just to take that revenue in and do something similar to what Jim mentioned. Use a call or a call spread as a way to protect yourself on the upside against those sales if you choose to and get them moving here. But, creating carry in this marketplace is going to be a little precarious here. There's certainly no clear path forward. I mean, the logistical elements that are going into this, we just witnessed this week what a potential rail strike may do. We saw one of the Central Illinois processors go from a 70 over mark to a 10 under mark on their new crop corn bid in one day, or their spot corn bid, in one day. And, we can get that kind of volatility going. And so diesel fuel prices, grain transportation costs, whether it's truck or rail or even barge, all kind of playing into that just a little bit. So it's an area where I think when you see a profit potential, when you see the potential to lock in some carry, it's probably a situation where we would be erring on the side of caution and leaning towards making those sales and locking those values in sooner rather than later.
Aaron Curtis, an 80-cent drop in basis is extraordinary. This would have been for old crop, of course, but it does point out how important the rail side is to the grain industry. You probably had to think about something longer term than 1 or 2 days. What issues did that present to you that you all talked through?
Well, logistics on rail have been a challenge, right, even the last 9 months to a year, right? So it's not been an ideal situation anyway, especially in inverted markets when the goal, right, is to continue to move things as quickly as possible because the market's not paying you to carry it or hold it, right? And so you need those markets to perform on a somewhat regular basis so that you can continue to move that grain as the market's suggesting that you do. So if the rail strike would have gone forward, and I know that we've still got some things to iron out there, and we're still going to be in a cooling off period for a while, but that would have created another additional log jam for the logistics issue and the grain elevator industry in general, just because once again, we're looking at these March corn spread at 5.25 cents and Novjan bean spread at 6.5 cent carry today. So that does not cover interest cost, right? So we're going to increase interest cost next week again when the Fed raises interest rates again. So right now, it's another year where it doesn't look like there's going to be much carry in the market. And the goal of the market is to continue to move things nearby. So we need those logistical things to cooperate. And rail is a big piece of that. We need trucks to perform as well. Obviously, driver shortages have been an issue for the last year. That looks like that's going to continue to move forward. And, you know, from the elevator side, Todd, all the costs continue to go up. We talked about diesel fuel, rail rates continue to increase, lack of carry, interest costs continue to move up. So, you know, in a margin business like the elevator side, it's going to be another challenging year.
I know it's different, but it's similar to the problems that were created as locomotives were not available as the United States, Canada were both producing so much oil in the northwestern part of the Corn Belt and then on up to the north and just simply couldn't put a locomotive in place to move grain as well. So there is some relative experience in this area. Let's talk a little bit about volatility. You mentioned, Dave, that this has been a pretty confusing year for producers, I suppose, for brokers as well. Volatility has been high. And you mentioned that money flow is part of that issue, that it's been moving really fast.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, it's been an exercise in volatility here really all year. We can see that in the crop insurance rates. We can see that in the option volatility, Mark. You know, we can see that in the daily price movements and, you know, where we're at. But I think in terms of, you know, what's happened here is that we can have one fundamental view of the market based on how we see the supply and demand fundamentals of grain, whether it's U.S. or the U.S. and the world combined. But prices and price action can take a very different role in that just because of what's going on in these macro market, outside markets and the ideas and things that we're dealing with here. And so when you look at, you know, I'll put it in these terms, when you look at, let's say, the global, I'll call it investment markets, so traditional equities, fixed income, you know, bonds, whatever, versus the global commodity market, we're talking about a market in that global equity market. It's roughly 60 or 65 times the size of the commodity market. So when we get fund managers in that space that say, I'm going to allocate 5 or 10% more of my capital into the commodity space, it's a big deal. It has a very multiplying effect on our markets up or down. And we've seen both of those this year as the inflation play took off and money came into our commodities and we made the highs in the spring. And we saw as that bled out, as commodities went sort of out of vogue, if you will, and remain a little bit in that sense. And so the global, I think the confidence in the investor, you know, landscape here in a macro sense, that the U.S. Fed or that World Central Banks, can engineer any type of a semi-soft landing in this battle against inflation and as they hike rates, I think is pretty low right now. And there's a lot of, I guess I'll say, caution in the air. And with that, you know, we have some stories in the grain. We had a bullish USDA report, or what should have at least been a supportive USDA report in the September WASDE. We got a reaction to that, an adjustment to that, but boy, it hasn't taken long to bleed that back off as we found a lack of new buyers and a lack of new money willing to come into our market. So without the story behind the, you know, in a grain market and without the confidence on the part of the investors to deploy capital, it's going to be tough to sustain a rally, particularly in the face of harvest here. So we're going to be facing those headwinds or those challenges or those influences, I'll call them, and they're somewhat outsized influences that can override our view of the marketplace or what we're seeing on our own supply and demand fundamentals at times. And you know, we're going to have to deal with that. And so as a producer making a marketing plan, like I said, it's almost impossible to figure out, hey, where's that spring crop insurance price going to be? Where are we going to be for new crop corn next year? But what we do know is something about our profitability and something about our input costs and what that means to our bottom lines. Again, I think that needs to be your guide.
Jim McCormick, I take it you've been thinking about inflation, interest rates, what the Federal Reserve might do as well, and how all of this macroeconomics has an impact on the marketplace.
Well, no doubt about it. I think Dave nailed it. I mean, you saw a lot of money come into the market early in the year based on that. Was the old axiom was, you know, you want to fight, and you know, if you got an inflationary market, you want to own commodities. When the Fed came out in midsummer and said, "Hey, I'm raising interest rates. I'm going to do everything I can to kill off this inflation." What did it tell the funds, Todd? It told the funds, you are wrong. I'm working against you. I'm trying to drive prices down. And it pushed a lot of money back out. But we have seen a lot of money kind of creep back into the market, I think, lately. I mean, the funds are long roughly a little over 200,000 contracts of corn, you know, about half their max position. And I think a lot of them bid into the market based on this supply tightening, based on the pro farmer tour as well as the USDA numbers. But now the real question, I think, is going to be, do they have that staying power? You know, we saw the CPI numbers, the PPI numbers this week. The Fed's going to raise interest rates next week by at least 0.75 points. I think you could see a shock and awe number of a full point and then they're going to do it again. Does that just tell the funds, hey, you know what? I know that we've got a tight supply going on, but the reality is the demand just may not be there. And that's move and get back out of the commodities like they did earlier in the year. And I think that's the risk of the producer of getting too bulled up as he's going through harvest, hearing these poor yields on parts of the country and not get, you know, and get kind of the backdoor itis and not look at what's going on in the world. China is a huge consumer of goods right now, and China confoundingly keeps fighting COVID like it did 2.5 years ago, locking people down, essentially, you know, driving down the demand for goods. And we don't know when they're going to stop that. And it could cause a kind of a domino effect to the economies around the world. And all of a sudden, if the demand's not there, it doesn't matter if we got a smaller crop than what people thought just 30 days ago.
Aaron, Dave and Jim are telling us about a lot of volatility, about a lot of money, managed money, a lot of flow that comes in and out of the market on a really regular basis. I'm not sure that that has always happened in the past. You've been in the grain business for long enough at the elevator level to understand whether this has changed the marketplace and your ability to set basis and other things on a daily basis. Does it really have an impact on you, and how closely do you have to manage your basis levels in being cognizant of what the managed money is up to?
Yeah, I think just the volatility in general, right? And it's not just in the futures market, right? We've seen a lot of volatility in spreads. I mean, look at what some of these old crop spreads did, and trying to manage that from inverted standpoint and just trying to continue to keep grain moving. Look at some of the volatility that we've seen in basis this last 12 months. So it's not just managing the futures, right? We had beans up 70 cents on Monday, right? And most of us remember when 70 cents would take a year or two, right, to move the bean market, right? So, and that's only been 20 years ago. So it's just a lot of money flow going back and forth. And from the elevator standpoint, right, especially these higher prices that we've had the last couple of years, it just, you know, just takes more money to manage inventory, manage positions, manage hedge positions, right? And that increases interest costs and those kind of things. So it just raises more costs for the elevator in general. But looks like we've got plenty of volatility still to come, even though the last part of this week has been pretty quiet. But I think that with the way some of these demand's going to shape out here, just that some of the unknown, right, on what that means, and just still trying to figure out what this yield is going to be, and look at crude down another $3 today. The dollar's hanging up here at 20-year high. So I think the funds are going to continue to have plenty of movement in this market as we continue to try to transition, right, to a time to where we are going to have a more plentiful supply. Is that next year? Is it going to take another year? But eventually some of these higher prices are going to cure high prices, as they say. I think one of the things to watch, right, is this La Nina pattern, right, which is now expected to kind of last until the next end of this year, right? If that would start to improve around the world, right, we're obviously, the producer is going to respond to some of these higher prices around the world. We're expecting that in Brazil here. They've already started planting beans, right, in southern Brazil, expecting a record crop there, expecting a record crop on corn as well in Brazil. But, you know, if we would start to see some of this world weather start to be more benign or start to normalize, right, we'll be looking at a situation where supply is going to kind of catch up to demand here in the next 6 months to a year.
Yeah, I've got three South American topics I want to cover. Aaron, if you could quickly run through the Argentine exports and how that's related to their money and finances there. Jim McCormick, when he's done, I want to talk a little bit about corn in Argentina. They're beginning to plant, but those areas are in the midst of a four-month drought and with nothing, I think, almost nothing in the way of rainfall. And then, Dave, if you could wrap up with the size of the expected soybean crop in Brazil. So, Aaron, what's up with Argentina and the exports to China?
Yeah, so in terms of just producing more, you know, obviously for Argentina, agriculture is a big component, right, of their revenue source, right? So Argentina farmer, due to the fact that just so much volatility with inflation and so much volatility in currency, right, they've been a pretty tight holder of beans as kind of their own hedge, right, against inflation. So the Argentina government came out with what they called a soybean dollar, where they took the a normal exchange rate from 140 pesos to the dollar to 200 pesos to the dollar, with the idea that that would encourage more grain flow and, you know, produce more revenue for the country. So Argentina farmer has responded, right, with that in the last week or so, and been a pretty active seller of soybeans, and the exporters turned around and shipped those beans. I think China's estimated to have bought 40 to 50 cargoes of Argentina soybeans over the last couple weeks, which would normally be a time frame that as we go into our harvest would be a time frame the U.S. would kind of benefit a little bit. It did come as probably a little more help to the U.S. just because the Delta was so wet, right, and the harvest was such a hard time getting going down there. We were getting pretty tight on soybeans, so you know, Argentina may have came in and helped out on the global side when the U.S. was kind of supplies just going to be kind of tight. Now the Delta is starting to dry out a little bit. There is still a little bit of concern on some damaged beans down through that area, but some harvest is starting to pick up. And, you know, we're going to have some harvest in the Midwest here in the next 7 to 10 days on beans as well. But yeah, China has come in and bought a lot of those beans that Argentina producers have been selling over the last week or two. And China's been happy to oblige the cheaper Argentina beans, because right now Argentina beans are well undercutting U.S. Values into October.
And Jim McCormick, corn in Argentina in trouble at the beginning of the season because of this four-month drought they've got going. It's a continuation of La Nina, I suppose.
Exactly. You know, this is the third year. You know, they're the third largest exporter of the grain, and it's a situation where it really gets interesting on the South American Argentina crop. With the U.S. crop corn carryout at 1.2 billion bushels, Todd, they lowered the yield, they lowered the harvest acres, made that adjustment. But the big thing I'm looking at is they cut demand year on year about 570 million bushels to keep that carryout essentially at pipeline levels of 1.2. Well, the European crop continues to shrink back, and all of a sudden, South America corn crop is not there. Or if it bleeds into Brazil having a short corn crop, the world balance sheet's going to get incredibly tight. And then the situation is the government correct? Did we actually cut 570 million bushels of demand off of our balance sheet? And the more problems we have in South America, the more unlikely that is, I believe, going to happen, which will drive demand back to us potentially, which drops our carryout to levels perceivably below pipeline levels, which could give us a very strong bull market. So our argument for producers is, you know, if you are selling these good prices right out of the field, especially if you got some better yields than anticipated, you might want to consider re-owning it. One other quick note I want to make on the beans in Argentina, though, Todd, is coming into this, there is estimated that Argentina still has about half of their bean crop left to sell. This special peso deal they're doing runs through the end of the month. But on top of it, now there's talk that there may be a penalty or a tax if producers in Argentina carry more than 10% of the old crop into new crop. So if you look at what the Argentina government's doing, they are forcing a lot of grain onto the market. And we've had a pretty good run of export sales. We're actually about 110 million bushels ahead of where we were last year. My fear is that, as your guest has noted, you know, China's bought a lot of Argentina beans. They may continue to be an aggressive Argentina bean buyer through the rest of the month at a time where we traditionally start becoming that lead exporter. So I think it's something a little bit of a concern we need to keep an eye on.
And Dave Chatterton, if you could follow up with the size of the soybean crop in Brazil and any of the other topics you want to take up too.
Yeah, well, I'll try and pick up a little bit on where Aaron and Jim left off here. I think it's all great points about South America. I think one of the key things here about China taking these Argentina soybeans is that, you know, from a political standpoint, they would love nothing more than, I think, to avoid taking, you know, any more U.S. beans than they need to. We saw, you know, our policymakers this week passed this Taiwan Policy Act, and the tension between the U.S. and China regarding Taiwan and how things are going to go there has China trying to do their best to avoid that. By buying these Argentina beans, they're creating a gap or a bridge towards getting to that Brazilian harvest that you mentioned, Todd. And for right now, we see China really has covered a vast majority of its needs for September, October, and most of November. And, you know, so they've got, you know, December and January really to bridge the gap before that Brazilian crop becomes available. When we look at the numbers on the Brazilian crop, it's really a big swing factor compared to what the USDA did for the U.S. crop here in our carryout of 200 million this year and possibly getting tighter. If we look at Brazil, you know, in a historical sense or in a near-term sense, three kind of subpar production years in a row due to La Nina. Now, La Nina is still present, but the USDA has Brazilian soybean production bouncing from 126 million metric tons this year up to 149 million metric tons next year, so for the 22-23 crop. A lot of the private industry sources that have been out on the wires, as well as the folks that we talked to on the ground down there, have that crop closer to maybe 155 million metric ton crop. And that 24 million metric ton difference is 850 million bushels of production. It is a huge swing factor of, do they have a lack of La Nina, a normal growing season, and a trend or above yield where we have a surplus of global beans, or do we have a situation where they run into a problem yet again, and we have to kind of come in and help balance that situation and make our own a little bit tighter. But, you know, this, you know, almost a billion bushel swing in some of these numbers can be very important to watch how things go. Now, planting in South America or Brazil started in the north here the first half of the month, but particularly gets going the second half of September and into October for the central and the southern region. So, you know, definitely something that the market will be watching here as we develop over the winter.
Let's finish our program up. We'll get a closing comment from each of you. Aaron Curtis from Midco, I'd like to start with you today, please.
Just a general PSA more than anything, Todd. Harvest season is approaching, right? We all have the same goal in mind to get through harvest quickly and safely. So just keep in mind from the elevator standpoint, right, as is the case across the country, labor is tight and the elevator industry is not immune to that. So just encourage some patience here as we go through the harvest season. We all have, like I said, the same goal in mind. We can get there if we just have a little patience and do it safely. And best of luck here as we get into harvest.
Jim McCormick from AgMarket.net.
I'm going to jump right on that a little bit. Have a safe harvest as we really ramp up, guys. But keep an eye on these marketplaces. I think the real key right now is make sure you're in line with your costs and your profitability. Don't get caught up on too much of the weather scares and what you're hearing. Keep your business plan in mind. And I know it's a busy time of year, but I truly do think you need to take a risk off approach on the new crop here sooner than later. If you're locking in that high fertilizer price, lock in some profits.
And Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing, your final word.
Yeah, I would echo both what Aaron and Jim said there. Additionally, I think, you know, it's a situation where I think it's time to be a little bit more defensive, or said differently, a little bit more proactive, as Jim put it, in terms of looking at your marketing, looking at locking up your input costs for next spring, thinking about next year and what those profitability levels look like to you and your operation. A lot of unknowns in the marketplace, both on the grain side of the equation and the macro side of the equation. I think we covered those. We don't need to beat them to death, but certainly, you know, don't be afraid, I think, to act. You know, last year at this time, we were a little bit more on the offensive. Hey, I think we can let things go. We like that way the market's shaping up. I think it's a different market here as we come into this fall and look towards next year. So keep that in mind in terms of your marketing and stay flexible.
I will add one thing, and I usually don't, but if you want to make sure your marketing plan is put in place, put your orders in at the elevator. Our thanks to Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing, Aaron Curtis from Midco, and Jim McCormick from AgMarket.net joined us here on this edition of Commodity Week. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Commodity Week can always be heard anytime you'd like at willag.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.